welcome to the sixth episode of the Meeple Podcast. I'm Bill Price.
And I'm Hollis Biggs.
And welcome back. If you're still with us at this point, then good on you.
Hopefully you've tried a couple of the games that we've talked about so far, and I'm pretty excited to talk about the two that we've got today.
Yes, we just finished playing a couple of new games for Hollis, and I will let you choose which one you would like to talk about first.
Sure. I think I would like to talk about Wandering Towers.
All right. Wandering Towers is a game by, it's Kramer and Kiesling, which are kind of a really well-known duo. And it is by Capstone Games. And it is relatively new, I'd say, within the last year or so. It's become kind of commercially available. It got really popular maybe about 9 months or so ago and then sold out of its print run. But here recently in the last month or so, it's come back into print. So it's pretty widely available wherever you buy your, you know, your board games. So tell me about it.
So this is a cool game that you might judge my description of this. So don't try not to judge it too harshly, but I would say it's a good mix of like a memory game and also Monopoly.
Okay. You know what? I see that this is a valid point. And just to give you a quick, super quick rundown, and you can see pictures of this on our Instagram account when this episode comes out. So you can kind of have an idea of what we're looking at. But there's basically a circle board, kind of board. And there are all of these cardboard towers. Mm-hmm. And they actually stack on top of each other. And each player has a group of meeples of their color. And we all know what meeples mean. Yep.
We do now. They're little wizard meeples in varying colors.
Yes, yes. And everyone also has these tokens that are potions that are empty on one side. You flip them over and they fill up. So the object of the game is to get all of your meeples. It's kind of a race game in that respect. It's you need to get all of your meeples into this one particular tower, the Black Keep, the Raven's Keep, I believe is what it's called. And it has a picture of a raven right there on it. And so you're trying to get all of your meeples into the Raven's Keep. Once they go in there, they don't come back out. And you're also, once that's all done, you have to have all of your potions filled as well.
So strategy of mine early on was to make sure that I got those potions filled as quickly as possible. I believe that was also your strategy because I was trailing right behind with potions that during most of the game. But one thing that I learned prior to playing the game is that if you do not have those potions filled at the end, you will lose effectively. You need those potions to be filled, and you need to have meeples on the board in order to collect those potions.
Correct. Because here's how you actually get how you fill the potions is you on your turn, you're going to play two of your three cards in your hand, and the cards are going to allow you to do one of two things: either move a tower or a section of a tower a certain number of spaces. And if it lands on another tower, then it covers that tower up, including any meeples that are on the tower. The other option is to move meeples a certain number of spaces, your meeples a certain number of spaces. So the way to fill potions is to actually move a tower and trap one or more meeples of either your color or somebody else's. So obviously, if we're doing the math here, if everybody saves all their meeples and gets them into the Raven's Keep, but they don't have their potions filled, they don't functionally have a way to fill potions after that. So you want to make sure and get that business taken care of first. Fortunately, it is the easier of the two things to do. So you just can't focus too much on moving the meeples. And it really does give you more than one, more than one thing to think about. What did you think of like basic gameplay?
Gameplay was fun. Another kind of thing, one of the more important things that you need to know when playing this game is that you need to have some memory skills to remember where your little wizard meeples are throughout the game, because I can't tell you how many times I moved towers trying to play this game, trying to find my own meeples. I found a couple of bills. That was great for Bill.
That was great for me.
Less great for me, because I truly could not remember where they were. And because you can stack towers on top of each other, it's not like I can just move a section and determine, you know, what's under every single tower in that section or in that stack. It's just moving towers at a time. So
yep.
It was really challenging, but a lot of fun.
Oh, for sure. And you can have four or five different towers stacked on top of each other, and there could be one or more meeples on any one of those levels. So you're like, aha, I'm going to move this. Oh, no, I should have gone one more level down. And the next time you're like, aha, oh, no, this isn't the tower at all that I thought it was. That happened to me a bunch of times, too. My memory is terrible. But that is kind of one of the fun, like, sort of chaotic things about this game. I think if you have a good memory, I don't think it's going to guarantee that you win or anything. But I think it's going to help.
It's definitely going to help. Can't hurt, for sure. The other thing that was kind of wild is that in order to get your meeple into the Raven's Keep, which is, I would argue, kind of the ultimate goal of the game, you have to exactly land. Whether you're rolling a dice to determine how many spaces you're moving or drawing a card that has a specific number of how many spaces your meeple can move, it has to exactly land itself in the keep. So you can't overshoot it. It's got to be exactly there. That's really cool and all. And you could have a strategy of trying to get them in there to that specific spot. But as soon as a meeple lands in the keep, it moves around the board. So it's kind of a wandering keep. And that's challenging as well, because that could have foiled all of my plans. And it did a number of times. Thanks, Bill. But sometimes it also helped me, because I did overshoot it one time with one of my meeples and then realized, oh no, I've got to go another 20 spaces around the board before I can even touch the keep. So that was kind of challenging.
Yes, but then if I recall, I actually put a meeple in the keep and moved it in front of you so that it was a little bit easier. Yeah, you know, that's what I'm here for, apparently, is to make things easier. But yeah, I've played it myself quite a few times, and I think it has fairly low rules overhead. There's only a couple things you really need to know to get started. It's got the big chunky pieces that are really fun to play with. I bet this would go really well with kids. It says 10 plus. I think it's just because the meeples are small and they think kids will eat them.
Potentially a choking hazard, so yeah. Be wary of that. But
so I would bet you could play this with younger children than 10. It shouldn't be any issue getting them to understand it.
Yeah, and it also says estimated about a 30-minute gameplay. I think it depends on how many players you have, because it determines how many meeples everyone has and how many, you know, how many people are kind of trying to fight for spots in the keep. But I would say a 30-minute time frame is probably a pretty good estimate.
Yeah, I would say. This does play 1 to 6, so you can solo it, and you can also play with up to 6 people. So that kind of nudges on the party game kind of territory. I'm not sure I'd necessarily call this a party game, but I'd say it's family weight for sure. So great gateway, especially if you have a larger group of people. A lot of games these days tend to, you know, max out at 4 or 5. So this is a good one if you've got that weird 6 number. This is not super portable. I mean, it's obviously in a box, so it's not like unportable, but I probably wouldn't recommend like running this one to, you know, your local tap house or restaurant to play. But if you've got a table, it doesn't take up a ton of table space or anything like that. So
no, I think this is a good one, but I think Bill's right. Maybe not the most portable of games, but the game pieces aren't too large. So if he did bring it, it's not the end of the world. He'd still have a good time.
Yeah. So let's start a rating system. Like, let's do 1 to 10. What are you giving this?
Ooh, 1 to 10. Let's see. I'm going to say, oh man, that's a tough question. I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Oh.
I don't know what determined the half there, but wow. I feel good about it.
Okay. I would have thought closer to an 8 or 8.5 for you, but 7.5. I give it an 8. I think it's a lot of fun. It's definitely above average. I'd put average for me probably around a 6 or 7. 7's a good game, but I think 8's a game that I'll ask to play. get to the table myself. So
that is fair. I'm going to say my average is closer to a 5. So okay. Trying to keep it maybe not statistically accurate here, but as close as possible.
All right. Well, we'll log all these games as far as their ratings and everything on the website. So
yeah, and play it for yourself. Take my rating with a grain of salt, as with Bill's. I think everyone should try these for themselves, but this is a really fun one. I would recommend it to a friend.
All right. Again, that is Wandering Towers. And the next one is by a designer we have seen before. And that was with Sushi Go. And that is Phil Walker Harding, who is one of my favorites.
This was another really good game.
And it's Baron Park.
Oh, sorry. I forgot we didn't even mention the title. Oh, my goodness. Not.
It is Baron Park.
I've been reading the title as we've been sitting here. Baron Park was a great game to play.
Yes, and it's by Lookout Games. It's for 2 to 4 players, and takes about, it says 30 to 45 minutes. I think it probably took us closer to 45, but we also had a rules teach with that. And in it, you are building a bear park.
A literal zoo for just bears.
Yep, just bears, like different kinds of bears. You got like koala bears, and you got panda bears.
Grizzly bears. Polar bears.
Yeah. So if you just are like, hey, you know what there aren't enough of out there? Bear parks. then this is your chance. This is your chance to be like, you know what? I'm going to have the best Baron Park there is. And this lets you do it. So how does it let you do it?
So I am going to relate this game to another game because that's my favorite part of of my portion of this segment. But I think this is probably the closest game to Tetris adjacent,
yes,
type of game. But basically you are gifted one park square, mm-hmm, effectively, and you are trying to place pieces to cover your square. There are different little different icons on some of the squares, such as a cement truck, a bulldozer, a wheelbarrow, a group of people, which
construction
means,
site.
Yeah. Yep. You can, if you cover that one, you can build an expansion to your park and you get another little square to add onto your Baron Park. So you're trying to fill the squares that you have. You're trying to build effectively these exhibits. And some of the exhibits that you build are in odd Tetris-y shapes.
Very odd Tetris-y shapes. So if you haven't seen this, take a look at it on the website. There's some unusual shapes there. But basically, in essence, what you're doing is this is what's called a polyomino game. So you'll hear that anytime you hear polyomino, think Tetris shapes of all sorts. This is kind of was a big craze in board games a few years ago. And everybody had to use polyominoes in their game. I have games where they're a completely different game. They have all this stuff going on, and there's this one little part where it's like, you know, for your storage area, store your polyomino pieces for the maximum efficiency puzzle. And I'm like, those didn't have to be in that. So I think it's been kind of overdone. You'll still see it in games now, but I think the craze is over. This was sort of towards the beginning of it and one of the first big games to use polyominoes. Phil Walker Harding did use a bunch of, he did make a bunch of other games that had polyominoes as well. But you have, like Hollis said, you have this board in front of you. And you are placing these Tetris shapes on it, which are animal enclosures and or porta potties or park spaces,
a stream,
or playgrounds.
Pond.
Yeah. And there are, once you place a Tetris piece, a polyomino piece on an icon or multiple icons, those icons let you get more pieces. More enclosures, bigger enclosures, weirder shaped enclosures. A lot of them are unique in that it only has like the one. Once it's gone, it's gone. And those are worth points, victory points. So the smaller stuff like the stream and the playground and the porta potty, they're not worth any points. But once you get into the bear enclosures and then like the big unique bear enclosures, they can be worth 2 points up to like 8 or 9 points. So in essence, and you can get up to three additional extensions to your park. So you can have up to four boards in front of you. And as soon as somebody's filled up all their stuff, all their spots on their boards, then the game ends. And you count up all of the victory points on all the enclosures on your board, and whoever has the most points wins.
You've typically got a reserve of pieces that you kind of have set off to the side of your boards, of your entire Baron Park. But you've got to use those strategically, because at first I was trying to cover every single space on my board, whether or not it had an icon. And that wasn't necessarily the best strategy. I really, looking back on it, should have probably tried to cover more ground with more unique pieces, because those were worth more points. Ultimately, I did not win this game.
When you need a lot of space for those unique pieces, because they're enormous.
And, huge.
Yeah, and some of them won't even fit on one board. They have to cross boards. So you need a lot of open space. So if you're filling every little thing before you get an extension, you may not be able to fill... you may not be able to place a lot of these pieces. So you're right. That is absolutely something to think about.
So it was kind of tough. It was ultimately a lot of fun, but I will say part of Bill's probably right in saying that part of what took so long is trying to explain the rules to me, because I was mostly just looking at the bears on the, I don't want to say I zoned out, but I was definitely looking at how cute all the little bear pieces were and trying to figure out where I would place them. But you're kind of racing against, you know, your co-players to gather some of these heavily weighted pieces. And it was just, I will say, a little tough. So it did take us about 45 minutes because I didn't really understand the reserve system at first. I was trying to just immediately place things on my board as quickly as possible. And that is not the rules of the game. So,
yeah, this one is, it's really... good. I feel like it's a good step into board games. This is a good gateway game because it is fairly easy to learn. Once you explain the rules, I mean, it's just you cover up this piece, you get more pieces, and you place them on your board. Like, that is realistically the entire game. There's little nuances here and there that you kind of pick up as you play, but that's kind of what makes a great gateway game, is it starts out as something super simple, but it turns into something that you can be much more strategic down the line. Now, this game does lend itself to what is commonly known in the hobby as very prone to analysis paralysis. So you'll hear a lot of people say, "Oh, that's a real AP-prone game. Too much AP, too much AP," and that's analysis paralysis, and that just means that there's a lot of strategic choices. So you're sitting there and you're like, okay, do I get this piece? Because then it will go over in this way and then it'll cover up that. And it'll let me get this other piece, which could go here. Or do, and so like you're playing through this in your head, and it can really just be paralyzing to figure out all of the different options. So games like this, I think the first few times you play them it's good if you need to have a timer. Or something, just say, you know what, go with your gut, go with your instincts, see how it plays out. You'll get quicker at it. But it definitely does lend itself to a lot of, I don't know what to do, and slow turns.
I took most of those slow turns. I can't tell you how many times, and this is no shade, but Bill would take his turn. I would take 5+ minutes on my turn, just trying to figure out what would fit or what would earn me the most points, what would, you know, help the most. And then Bill would already have his next piece picked out the minute it flipped to his turn. So bless his heart, I appreciate him for waiting on me, for being very patient with me on playing this game the first time. I would play it again, for sure. I think it would take a little less time now that I know how to play and know a little bit how my strategy might change.
Yeah, if you start thinking about some of those bigger pieces earlier and how to sort of get to them and get your extensions out without necessarily filling them, getting them in the right places, I think that it's it definitely gets easier. I have played this a lot.
Yes, and he was very good at it. Yep. I think also, and again, really appreciate Baron Park and Wandering Towers. Part of my rating system, if I was going to rate this one, I need everyone listening to, again, take my rating with a grain of salt, because a lot of it depends on whether or not I won. So that I did not win Baron Park. I also did not win Wandering Towers. So it was kind of a rough game day for me.
But you almost won Wandering Towers.
That's
like you had a one nice, guy left. And
totally.
That's I think another turn or two you'd have had.
Bill is a very nice liar. but Baron
I'm a terrible
Park.
Liar.
But Baron Park was a lot of fun. I was quite a few points off. But again, I know my strategy for next time. I think I'd have a lot of fun playing it a second time. So Baron Park, my rating's going to be a 7 on this one.
Okay. I'm also going to give it a 7. 7 for me, being a game that I like and I will play if somebody wants to play it. Be like, hey, I may not openly suggest it myself all the time, but I'm happy to play it.
Yeah. It was definitely a good one. And this one is mildly more portable, but there are about 1,000 pieces.
Yeah.
They're not meeples, but they're just little pieces that would be tough to replace if you lost them. So maybe this is one that stays just with like board game groups, or kind of stays in your home, or, you know, in a place where you probably won't lose or misplace or, you know, one of the pieces.
Yeah, I think my biggest knock on it, honestly, is not even gameplay related. It takes a long time to set up. And if you're not playing with the maximum players, which is 4, if you're playing with 2 or 3, there's pieces you have to take out. And so it can be, I don't want to say a daunting setup, but it can be a setup that is, if there's another game of, you know, comparable excitement, if there's another 7 on the, you know, on the shelf, I would probably pull that one out before this one.
That's fair.
So keep that in mind. There's a little bit of setup to this, but overall, I enjoy it. So I think that that brings us to our time. So where did it go? It just flew by today.
These were some really good ones. I was happy to talk about them for a while.
Absolutely. So we would love to hear from you guys. You can check out our website at www.themeeplepodcast.com. Check us out on Instagram at The Meeple Podcast. And we have a Facebook group, Facebook page. You can just search The Meeple Podcast. And if you see our little logo there, then that's us. So you can also, we'd love to hear from you, actually. And so shoot us an email at themeeplepodcast@gmail.com. And we will be happy to read your email on the air and or answer any questions, talk about any games that you might like that you want us to cover. Say you're just a big champion of, I don't know, insert random game here, and you want us to talk about it, and you're like, this is the best game I've ever played. So let us know. I might have it.
So, and we'd love to talk about it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.